Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine for a second that your body is like a high security facility, and your immune system is the ultimate surveillance network.
Right, constantly on patrol.
Exactly. Your T cells are patrolling, trying to scan the biochemical barcodes on billions of moving boxes just to see what is inside. And their entire job is to find the one box containing, say, a rogue virus or a cancerous mutation hidden among billions of healthy cells.
Which is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, but the terrifying part is that the barcodes keep changing.
Yeah.
The cancer cells are constantly smudging the ink, you know, mutating their surface proteins to avoid detection.
It's a relentless microscopic numbers game. I mean, your body generates millions of different T cells through a process of genetic recombination. It is essentially shuffling their DNA to create this massive variety of receptors.
Hoping one of them just randomly fits.
Yeah, basically hoping that one of those random configurations will be the exact right shape to bind to whatever new mutated threat comes along.
Which brings up the central, massive question we are looking at today. What if a computer algorithm could instantly tell us exactly which T cell will attack which specific disease? How could this change the speed of vaccine development or the sheer precision of cancer immunotherapy?
That would be entirely revolutionary.
Right. To visualize what we're trying to predict, think of this interaction like a highly complex mechanical lock and key. The disease leaves a tiny fragment of itself, like a sequence of amino acids on the outside of the cell. That is the lock.
And your T cell has a uniquely shaped receptor on its surface. That is the key.
And right now, we are trying to use machine learning to calculate the exact three-dimensional physics of how those two structures interact without ever having to test them in a physical laboratory.
Because if we can solve this computationally, we bypass years of manual trial and error. We could move straight into targeted therapies.
Today, we celebrate the work of Felix Drost, Benjamin Schubert, and their team at Helmholtz Munich and the Technical University of Munich. We're taking a deep dive into their breakthrough open access article, Benchmarking of T-Cell Receptor Epitope Predictors with Epitope TCR, which was published in the journal Cell Genomics on August 13th, 2025.
This is a phenomenal piece of work because it takes a highly chaotic Wild West era of computational biology and, well, forces it into the harsh light of standardized testing.
Which is so desperately needed right now.
It really is. But to appreciate what this team has built, we have to look at the clinical bottleneck they are trying to break through. You mentioned the lock and the key analogy earlier.
Yeah, the T cell and the infected cell.
Right. So in biological terms, T cells recognize disease cells by binding to something called an epitope. An epitope is essentially an antigen-derived peptide. It is a tiny chopped up piece of a virus or a tumor, usually just 9 to 11 amino acids long. And it gets presented on the surface of the infected cell by a molecular display case known as the major histocompatibility complex, or MHC.
Okay, so the disease cell is fundamentally holding up a molecular flag saying, hey, I've been infected, or hey, I am undergoing cancerous mutations.
Exactly. And deciphering the rules of that interaction, knowing exactly which T cell receptor sequence will bind to which specific epitope MHC complex, is considered one of the holy grails of modern immunology.
Wow.
In fact, deciphering this interaction is so crucial for the future of medicine that it was declared one of the 9 cancer grand challenges in 2023. If we want to engineer custom T cells to eradicate a patient's specific tumor, we have to know the biochemical rules of this binding event.
But doing this in the real world, like in a physical wet lab, is agonizingly slow. You are dealing with a laboratory process called multimarinus staining, which, sounds straightforward, but is actually a massive logistical headache.
It is an incredibly labor-intensive process. Multimer staining involves artificially synthesizing these target lock and key complexes in a lab. Because a single binding event is often too weak to detect, scientists have to attach 4 or more of these complexes to a molecular scaffold just to increase the binding strength.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and then they conjugate that entire structure with fluorescent dyes, manually incubate them with millions of living patient T cells, and run the whole mixture through a massive flow cytometer machine just to sort out the ones that light up.
And that takes days. It costs tens of thousands of dollars per batch. And at the end of all that, you've only tested a tiny handful of known disease targets.
Which is exactly why in silico, or computational prediction, is the absolute dream for immunologists. Because multimer staining is so agonizingly slow, the field naturally turned to Silicon Valley for a shortcut.
Makes sense.
The goal is to simply feed the text string of the T cell's genetic sequence and the text string of the disease epitope into a computer, run some heavy math, and have it spit out a binding probability.
That naturally led to an absolute explosion of machine learning models. Over the last few years, everybody with a laptop and a neural network has built a sequence-based prediction model. We've got dozens of these AI predictors, and if you read their preprints, they all claim to be the magic bullet that has solved the folding problem.
But the landscape they created is a total mess because they all use different custom data formats. It is a nightmare for data scientists.
Right, yeah.
You have massive, highly valuable public databases of immune information, but they are architected completely differently. A database like ARR has very specific column headers and metadata structures detailing the V, D, and J gene usage of the T cell.
Oui.
Meanwhile, a database like VDJDB prioritizes completely different conceptual frameworks. It focuses heavily on the known epitope targets and the specific pathology. Harmonizing those completely different data architectures isn't just a matter of copy and pasting rows in a spreadsheet.
Okay, let's unpack this. If we have all these shiny new AI predictors, why isn't the problem solved? Are these algorithms just not speaking the same language?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture,
The
lack of standardized benchmarking means scientific progress is completely stalled. You have researchers publishing models claiming 90% accuracy, but they are grading their own homework.
Wait, really?
They tested their model on data it essentially already memorized during its training phase, or they tested it against a weak baseline that doesn't reflect real-world clinical complexity.
Oh, wow. That's a huge problem.
It is. If you are a clinician trying to develop a personalized cancer vaccine, you don't have the time or the computational budget to reformat your patient's genetic data 20 different ways to test 20 different models, only to get 20 conflicting answers.
Because you can't improve what you can't accurately measure. Which is why the solution that Drost, Schubert, and their team built is so vital. They created a framework called Epitope TCR. It is an extension of an existing computational framework, but fundamentally it acts as a universal translator and an impartial referee.
Exactly. They built a unified interface that can ingest 6 of the most common fractured data formats in the field, like ARR and VDJDB, and seamlessly route that data through 21 different pre-trained TCR epitope prediction models.
21 models. That is a massive undertaking.
We should definitely take a moment to look at the architecture of the models they integrated, because they fall into 2 distinct philosophical camps. Of the 21 models, 3 are what we call categorical predictors, and 18 are general predictors.
So what's the difference between categorical and general?
Categorical models are basically pattern matchers trained on a fixed, rigid set of known disease targets.
Hmm.
They look at a new T cell and essentially ask, does the sequence of this receptor look statistically similar to the other T cells we already know fight influenza?
Okay, so they're looking for familiar shapes.
Right. They are useful for known threats, but they cannot adapt to a brand new, unseen virus. General models are much more ambitious. They take both the sequence of the T cell and the sequence of the disease epitope as their inputs.
And theoretically, they are trying to learn the underlying biochemical rules of binding. They're supposed to be learning the actual physics of how these amino acids interact, which means they should be able to predict binding for completely unknown novel diseases or spontaneous cancer mutations.
That is the theoretical promise, yes. But building this universal translator wasn't just an exercise in software engineering. The researchers used epitope TCR to stage a brutal, highly controlled examination.
The ultimate test.
Exactly. They took all 21 of these models and ran them through 2 highly challenging independent data sets that none of the models had ever seen during their training phases.
The first part of this gauntlet was the viral data set. They took high-quality single-cell sequencing data comprising 638 distinct T-cell receptors, and they tested them against 14 different viral epitopes. We are talking about targets from SARS-CoV-2, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr, and influenza, spread across 5 different MHC genetic backgrounds.
And the second data set was even more punishing. The mutation data set was built from deep mutational scans.
Mutational scans?
Yeah. In a deep mutational scan, scientists take a known target, in this case, a tumor neoepitope and a CMV epitope, and they systematically mutate every single position in the peptide sequence. They swap out one amino acid building block at a time to map the entire binding landscape.
Oh, that's clever.
The researchers used this data to see if the AI could detect how a single microscopic physical mutation changed the T cell's ability to bind to the target.
It's like taking 21 different translation apps, forcing them to use the same dictionary, and giving them the hardest final exam imaginable to see who actually understands the language and who is just faking it.
I love that analogy. It is a perfectly high bar for an algorithm to clear. A single point mutation can completely alter the shape or the electrical charge of a protein. It can be the literal difference between a cancer cell being eradicated by the immune system or it slipping past the surveillance network and growing into a lethal tumor.
So let's look at the actual report card from this benchmarking test, starting with the viral exam results. The primary metric they used to grade these models is AUC, or area under the curve.
And the results were highly sobering. In a binary classification task like this, an AUC of 0.5 means the model is essentially flipping a coin. An AUC of 1.0 represents perfect predictive accuracy. Out of the 21 heavily hyped AI models, only 4 of the general methods and 2 of the categorical methods managed an AUC greater than 0.6.
Wow, that low.
Yeah, the absolute highest performing model across the board was MITS-TCR Pred, and it only achieved an average AUC of 0.63.
That is barely above random chance.
Yeah.
And if you look at the rank-based metrics, which measure how often the AI ranks the correct disease target as the absolute most likely match for a given T cell, the best models were only retrieving the correct match in the top 1% of predictions about a quarter of the time.
Which means if you use these algorithms to automate your laboratory analysis today, you would be chasing false leads the vast majority of the time.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Are these AI models actually learning the underlying biology of the immune system? Or are they basically just memorizing the most popular flashcards in the deck?
The data heavily points to the flashcard hypothesis. This is a classic problem in machine learning known as shortcut learning. Neural networks are inherently lazy. They are mathematical optimization engines designed to lower their error rate as quickly as possible.
So they take the path of least resistance.
Exactly. Computing the complex electrostatic interactions and spatial conformations of a protein-protein bond is mathematically incredibly difficult. But memorizing a statistical distribution of the training data is easy.
So, if 80% of the training data consists of the exact same 5 COVID and influenza epitopes, the model simply learns that guessing high binding probability whenever it sees those specific text strings yields a great score.
Yes. The researchers proved this by analyzing the raw prediction scores. They discovered a massive score bias. The models were artificially inflating their prediction scores for the common, popular targets and assigning near zero scores to the rare ones, almost completely ignoring the actual sequence of the T cell receptor.
Completely ignoring it.
Pretty much. For some of the rare epitopes, the standard deviation of the prediction scores was effectively zero. The model just handed out a flat low score to every single T cell it was shown because it didn't recognize the epitope's text sequence from its training days. It wasn't simulating biology at all, it was just doing popularity-based text retrieval.
That is a staggering blind spot. It is essentially an AI hallucination of confidence, driven entirely by what happens to be trending in public biological databases. And if they struggled with the basic viral targets, the results from the mutation dataset were an absolute bloodbath.
Oh, absolutely. The models utterly failed the mutational scan. The top performing model in this specific category called ITSEP only achieved an AUC of 0.61. Keep in mind, these models can often easily recognize the base wild-type epitope.
Right.
If you show the AI the normal, unmutated tumor target, it confidently states that it will bind to the T cell. But the moment you change a single amino acid in that sequence, the models completely fail to calculate how that physical change impacts the binding physics.
To really drive this mechanism home, imagine you have a physical metal key that fits perfectly into your front door. The AI looks at the gross shape of the key and says, yep, that opens the door. But then you take a metal file and you shave 1 millimeter off a single tooth on that key. You ask the AI, does this still open the door?
And it guesses wrong.
Because the AI doesn't actually understand the complex mechanics of the tumblers inside the lock. It just looks at the key, sees that the stem and the handle look 99% identical to the key it saw yesterday, and it guesses yes.
That analogy perfectly captures the mechanical failure of these algorithms. Changing a single amino acid might mean swapping a small neutral molecule like alanine for a massive, positively charged molecule like arginine.
Which changes everything.
It completely alters the shape and the electrostatic potential of the entire binding surface. A physical T cell would bounce right off it due to electrostatic repulsion. But an AI that just reads text strings is completely blind to that physical reality.
Did they see this happen in the data?
Yeah, in one striking example from the paper, a model tested against a heavily studied cytomegalovirus epitope confidently predicted that every single mutated version would bind to the T cell. It just assumed that because the base target was popular, the mutated versions must be highly likely to bind too.
So what does this all mean for practical application? We started this deep dive talking about the dream of instant computational matching for immunotherapies. With performance this low, are clinicians basically forced back to the wet lab?
We are certainly getting a much-needed reality check on the limits of current sequence-based AI. What this means for practice today is that researchers cannot blindly trust these tools as autonomous diagnostic engines. Right now, they can realistically only be used to generate hypotheses or narrow down candidates for well-represented, highly studied epitopes.
And the paper was very clear that you cannot use a one-size-fits-all threshold. You can't just draw a global line at a score of 0.8 and say, everything above this is a valid clinical target.
Absolutely not. Scientists have to establish distinct epitope-specific thresholds. You have to calibrate the algorithm for the exact disease target you are looking at, knowing full well that its confidence is likely artificially inflated by its training data.
But despite this seemingly grim report card on the current generation of machine learning models, there's a massive silver lining here. Even though the individual predictive algorithms have deep flaws, the epitope TCR framework itself is a monumental victory for the field.
It is the exact foundational infrastructure the field has been lacking. By building epitope TCR, this team has finally broken the bottleneck of inconsistent data and self-serving benchmarks.
That's incredible.
Now, when a computer science team develops a brand new algorithm, they don't have to test it in a vacuum. They can plug their model directly into epitope TCR and instantly see how it performs against 20 other models on brutally honest, standardized, and unmemorized data. It forces the entire field to stop grading their own homework.
It sets the baseline for what actual scientific rigor looks like in computational immunology.
This raises an important question. How do we generate the right kind of training data, like the PT mutational scans mentioned in the paper, so future models learn to generalize rather than just memorize?
Because right now, the AI is only being shown the successes. It is only looking at databases full of known successful bindings.
Precisely. We need to feed the neural network systematic, high-quality, negative data. We have to show them exactly how subtle, structural, and electrical changes actively break a binding event. If we want them to learn the physics of the lock, we have to teach them why the wrong keys fail, not just the gross shape of the most common keys.
To summarize this incredibly complex landscape, epitope TCR brings much-needed, rigorous standardization to computational immunology. It proves that while our current AI models are reasonably good at recognizing highly familiar viral targets through shortcut learning, they fundamentally struggle to adapt to rare epitopes or subtle, single amino acid mutations. However, the framework itself provides the exact standardized blueprint the scientific community needs to build better, more reliable clinical tools that actually understand biological physics.
It is a critical pivot point. It strips away the artificial intelligence hype and shows us exactly where our blind spots are and exactly what kind of data we need to gather next.
What does this mean for the future of personalized medicine? If our current AI can't yet reliably predict how T cells react to a single mutating cancer cell, how will we design the next generation of agile therapies before the next novel virus strikes?
That is the ultimate challenge moving forward.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
you test them right. Run it deep, run it rough, let the numbers start. Same start line for every bow, climb the walk. If it breaks, let it break, then we'll learn the way. No more faith in the headline, we replay. On the offbeat, we find the truth. Not the loudest guess, but the one that moves. Put it through the benchmark, let it prove. TCR to a beat, so be what really comes through. Then fade to gray. Some stay standing when the noise drifts away. We're chasing the fit between lock and key. In a storm of signals, what's meant to be. Even when the file's torn and the ink won't stay, we can build a fair test anyway. Hold every method to the same moonlight. Measure the shadow, then sharpen the sight. On the offbeat, we find the truth. Not the loudest guess, but the one that moves. It's all.